Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
I'm not going to go with the full roundup. I'm going to isolate one thing, and I'm doing it because of this.
Garoppolo fires. It is caught. Still on his feet is Kittle with a big play and the stiff arm. George Kittle, flags fly. He's down to the 30. What a run by George Kittle. Taking on everybody, but the penalty is huge. There are multiple flags. It would be a 39-yarder on 4th and 2.
Personal foul, face mask, defense, number 43.
Look at the fight between the two of them. The mask is held the entire way by Marcus Williams, and Kittle refuses to go down.
This dude. Thanks to Fox for that. If you can get a guy like that, if you can get an NFL player grabbing another NFL player by the face mask and ripping him to the ground, and he still won't go down. The George Kittle play. That's the reason I'm busting open the format. That's the reason I'm not going to go NFL roundup in the opening segment, because of the George Kittle play. Like, as good as the other games were yesterday, there are no other highlights to compare to that one. If that's not the play of the year, I don't know what is. When you consider the situation and the stakes, that might not only be the play of the year, that might be the play of years, literally. 39 seconds left, 4th and 2 on their own 33. And right before the ball is snapped, Kyle Shanahan calls timeout. He changed the play. He changed it to a choice route. And it was a very good choice. Hail! Let's do that thing again. Here we go again. 39 seconds left, 4th and 2 on their own 33. I cannot get enough of this guy or this play.
Garoppolo fires. It is caught. Still on his feet is Kittle with a big play and the stiff arm. George Kittle, flags fly. He's down to the 30. What a run by George Kittle.
This dude's a stud, man. Everything about that play is incredible. The route, the catch, the run, the fact that he had Marcus Williams attached to his face mask and he still kept on rumbling. This guy made Marcus Williams, a damn good DB, look like a bug on his windshield. Now, I tried to warn y'all about George Kittle. This guy's a monster. Guys are not supposed to be that big, that fast, that physical, that athletic, and that impossible to bring down. This guy is so good, so dangerous, and so versatile. He can dominate a game without catching a single pass. That's how good of a blocker he is. And when he does catch a pass, you better hope he runs out of bounds, because if he doesn't, somebody is going to pay a big price. I've tried to tell you about this guy. Just like I've tried to tell you for a while that the 49ers are for real. Maybe now you will believe me. They are for real. You go to Baltimore and you come that close to winning a fight in the rain with the best team in the AFC. Then you spend a week out east. Then you go to New Orleans and deal with the number one team in the NFC in their house. That's the kind of thing that would crush most teams. Like, most teams would show up in New Orleans, a shell of themselves, after a really physical loss the week before in Baltimore. I mean, they'd be banged up, bruised up, mentally, physically, and they'd be thinking about the fact that, you know what, we've already got that wild card wrapped up, pretty much. So, let's save ourselves. You know, for who, for what? Why are we going to kill ourselves against the Saints in their house when we've already got that wild card? Like, most teams would see Drew Brees and the Saints offense, Cam Jordan, and the Saints defense. They'd hear that crowd. Call it a day. Check you guys next week. Mentally prepare for what's still ahead. But whatever you do, don't waste the energy necessary to beat the best team in the conference in their house after having to deal with the best team in the other conference in their house a week earlier. You know, like, for who? For what? Oh, hell nah. I don't need that. Especially after they fell behind 20-7 early in the second quarter. But then again, I have tried to tell you about these Niners. They're not just talented. They're not just well-coached. Man, they're tough as hell, mentally and physically, and they play bully ball. Going into that dome, falling behind by double digits, and you're going to come back and win? Are you serious about that? They fall behind 20-7, and on the first play of the second quarter, that's where they are. And then one play later, they're right here.
Garoppolo looking for a deep ball. Going to throw one down the middle for Emmanuel Sanders. He's got it. He was knocked out. He can get up and run. He may have been touched down. Breaks a tackle. 10, 5, touchdown, San Francisco.
49ers radio. And just to finish the thought, right? New Orleans comes back with a long TD drive. San Francisco responds with two of their own. And they take a 28-27 lead into halftime. 55 points in the first half was not exactly what people were expecting yesterday, but when you put Sean Payton and Kyle Shanahan together, they're going to take their shots, and they're going to land them. That was electric ball. The first half was already one of the best games of the entire year. It only got better, right? After Robbie Gould gave San Francisco a five-point lead with 2:23 to go, Drew Brees went to work, and you knew how that drive would end with the Saints in the back of the end zone.
Niners bring pressure again. Brees throws over the middle. That ball's caught. Traquan Smith at the 10. Smith double tackle into the end zone. Traquan Smith! Fred Warner in coverage. They bring pressure 18 yards to Traquan Smith for the go-ahead touchdown.
Saints radio. My man's talking faster than Pete Carroll. His voice is cracking like crazy. But that was a given. As good as the Niners defense is, Brees is an absolute legend. The Niners had their chances to end it on that drive, especially with an INT, but it did not happen. And that would have been your storyline. The Niners go on the road. They play another elite team, tough as hell, but they just can't finish. The story would go that there was nothing but respect for the Niners, and maybe one of these days they finally would break through. Except yesterday was that day, and the breakthrough was the George Kittle play. George Kittle v. the Saints secondary. Have you seen this play?
Garoppolo fires. It is caught. Still on his feet is Kittle with a big play and the stiff arm. George Kittle, flags fly. He's down to the 30. What a run by George Kittle.
If it sounds like I'm spending a lot of time on this game, if it sounds like I'm spending a lot of time on that play, it's because I am. It was macho. Here's what Kittle himself had to say after the game.
You know, like my tight end coach always says, don't let one guy tackle you. Now that was my mindset. You know, just try to run through him, try to carry him as far as I can.
By the end of that run, it was no longer a run. That was a street fight. That was a mugging where three dudes jumped George Kittle in an alley. And somehow they came out of that brawl looking the worst of it. Much worse. 39 yards, 4th and 2. Plus more for the face mask. And it'll come as no surprise that Kittle was not at all bothered by that face mask. He told Peter King, quote, I knew he'd get flagged for it, so I was actually happy. It just meant 15 more yards for us. And it should come as no surprise that the rest of the 49ers saw that. The team itself, they saw that play, and they were going insane. Listen to Richard Sherman.
A lot of people just go down and complain about the face mask pull. He's like, regardless of the face mask pull, I'm going to bully you all the way to the end zone until you stop me. And that's his mindset. And, you know, we're thankful to have him because we don't win that game without that play.
I don't know. When Sherm talks, and I don't know about you, but when Sherm talks, I listen every single time. That was a statement play for Kittle and the Niners. Again, on the road, in the loudest environment possible. Possible. With a potential one seed in the NFC on the line. And they come up with that play on 4th down, and then they finally win it on this.
Here's your football game. High snap. Wisnowski got it down. Robbie Gould's kick is good! Robbie Gould beats the New Orleans Saints at the gun.
That was not only the football game. That may have been the entire season. Like, bully you into the end zone or until you stop me is the perfect description, because Kittle was looking to make guys pay, and the Niners made the Saints pay. So, that was Kyle Shanahan going up against one of the greatest offensive minds ever in Sean Payton and winning. That was Jimmy Garoppolo going up against one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, Drew Brees, and winning. And that would be a pretty good time for you clones to stop glossing him Jimmy Gigolo. Jimmy G, man. Jimmy Garoppolo. Get that name right. I've got thoughts on him, too. Remember what he looked like in the preseason. Remember all you 49er fans freaking out about how he looked in the preseason, and now look at him. Look how well he's playing right now. So every question you had about him, and mostly every question you had about the Niners, should have been answered a long time ago, but if they weren't, they should be now after what happened. They're not just going to beat you with crazy schemes. They're going to beat you down with their physicality and their mental toughness. Finally, Kittle had this to say, and I mentioned this on the NFL on CBS. I said, this phrase is thrown around quite a bit, but Kyle Shanahan really is a genius. This guy literally is a genius. Kittle had this to say about his head coach.
You know, one thing Coach Shanahan always says, don't let the bear loose in the building, kind of like the semi-pro thing. So no matter what happens, just keep calm, cool, collected, and just ride the wave. And I think that we did really good that. No matter the ups and downs, we just kept going.
At the risk of twisting that metaphor into something totally different, the bear was loose in the building. Say, are you worried about finding the perfect gift for this holiday season? I've got it for you. Peloton. Peloton is the gift that they're guaranteed to love this holiday season. Give your loved ones what they really want. Give them the gift of Peloton. I own a Peloton. I bought my Peloton long before we partnered up on this podcast. I love my Peloton for so many different reasons. It's convenient. It's right there in the house. I never miss a workout. I love the variety of classes, the different instructors, the way you can compete, that there's a leaderboard, that there's a community. I love this product. And now more than ever is the reason why you want to get in. There is the gift of a worry-free trial. That's right. With Peloton's new 30-day home trial, you can try the bike worry-free for 30 days. If you decide it's not for you, you can return the bike for a full refund. Peloton will even come pick it up at no cost. That is amazing. Except I don't think that's going to be an issue. Not with the endless variety of entertaining live and on-demand classes, plus the motivation you get from world-class instructors. This is the gift that keeps on giving well beyond the holiday season. And once again, it's the gift that saves time. With efficient, high-intensity cardio workouts from your home, you will spend less time commuting to and from the gym. You don't have to deal with the winter weather. And then you can spend more time with the people you love and the things that matter most. This holiday, give the gift of Peloton for a limited time only. Get $100 off accessories when you purchase the Peloton bike. Simply go to onepeloton.com and use the promo code Rome at checkout. That's onepeloton.com. Use the promo code Rome at checkout. I absolutely love my Peloton, and I know you will too. He is Jeffrey Chidiha. Jeff, what's going on? How are you?
I'm doing well, Jim. How about yourself?
Good, really good. Jeff, great to have you back. Let me start you off with the Chiefs, because last week you were in Kansas City for the game against Oakland, and for a while now, Jeff, people around KC have been talking about the potential of the Chiefs' defense. Are you starting to see that become a reality? How do they look to you defensively?
They look good right now, and you look the way they played against the Patriots yesterday. Granted, the Patriots' offense has its own issues, but this defense is realizing that they don't have to play second fiddle to the Chiefs offense. In the last three games, the Chiefs have all won those games with their offense not playing at the level they're used to, but you're seeing that defense make a lot of plays, and you saw it against Tom Brady again yesterday, including Rashard Breeland having a big game, the pass breakup at the end, and the big interception. So if that defense is playing the way they are, and they still got Patrick Mahomes playing quarterback, they look pretty good coming playoff time.
All right, so there's a lot of good stuff in there that I want to get to, but let me ask you about Tyrann Mathieu. He's long been, Jeff, one of my favorite guys to talk to. When you talk to guys around him, what kind of an impact has he had on that defense?
Well, it's the same impact he had when he was in Arizona and in Houston. You talk to people in those teams, they talk about just the leadership he brings and the instincts and the intangibles. And he's had a huge impact on Juan Thornhill, their rookie safety. I think he's made life easier for their cornerbacks, and that was a big issue coming into the season for this team, how they were going to play at that position. And they've been pretty steady back there. And he's also helped Steve Spagnuolo probably implement this new defense with six new starters. So just being a calming presence back there has been a huge impact for this team.
Jeffrey Chidiha is joining us. All right, Jeff, what about the offense? Patrick Mahomes went into yesterday with 20 touchdown passes, only two INTs, but still it seems like there were some questions surrounding the offense. How concerned were people around the team about the offense?
Well, they'll tell you they're not concerned about it because they believe in the potential and the talent, but you know, outside of the team, you're seeing some cracks in that armor. It's not the same offense it was last year, even at the start of this year where they had so many weapons. They've had a lot of injuries, especially on the offensive line. They haven't had Tyreek Hill all season long. Sammy Watkins has been in and out. Running backs have been banged up. So they're really relying heavily on Mahomes, Travis Kelce, and Tyreek Hill. And when they can get somebody else to step up, as they did yesterday with Mecole Hardman having a big touchdown catch, that's a big boost for this offense. But, yeah, they're not the same level they were. but still very dangerous.
We're talking to Jeffrey Chidiha. You know, Foxborough, obviously, Jeff, is a nearly impossible place to get a win. So how big was that win just from a psychological standpoint for Kansas City?
Yeah, what's the place that Jason Bourne was created? Treadstone? That's
right.
What Foxborough feels like. They got all kinds of stuff down in there. You just can't really understand. But very impressive win. Like they've won 21 straight games there. And to be honest, winning in December there is even harder to do because that hadn't happened to them, losing a game since 2015. So for the Chiefs to get this win, I think it was more important for their confidence. The takeaway here is that both these teams are still chasing Baltimore. They are the cream of the crop right now in the NFL. But to win in Foxborough, the Chiefs know that gives them a pretty good leg up if they have to go back there and play to get to the AFC Championship game. Because right now they know they can go in there and they're not going to be awed by it.
Jeffrey Chidiha joins us. All right, so where does that lead them overall? For instance, Kansas City, Jeff, has won 3 straight. They have not allowed more than 17 points in any of those games. So when you look at Kansas City as a whole, both offensively and defensively, how do you think this year's team compares to last year's?
Well, I think they're a more complete team. They're not as explosive and not as reliant on their offense as they were last year, but that speaks to their defensive improvements. And they've shown a lot more, but they're a mentally tough team. They've shown a lot more character in terms of being able to fight through things, through adversity. They didn't have Mahomes for 2 games. They beat the Vikings. They went down, lost, I think, 3 or 4 games out of 6. They've been able to come back and get on a win streak here. It shows that they're a little bit tougher. And that's going to help them again come postseason.
All right, so what about New England? Where does that leave them? For instance, how worried would you be right now about that offense and the fact that they really don't scare or intimidate anybody, at least not offensively?
Well, I'd be frightened if I was them right now, because when you're calling out trick plays in the first quarter to get points on the board, that's not a good sign of how you feel about what you have on the field or on your roster offensively. And we've seen this before from Bill Belichick, where I can think back a few years ago when he let Chandler Jones go and Jamie Collins, and the feeling was, hey, we don't need to have Pro Bowl caliber guys around here. We got our scheme. We got Tom. We can do all these things. Well, I bet they wish they had Demaryius Thomas right now, and I bet they wish they had Josh Gordon right now, and as big of a headache as Antonio Brown is, I bet they'd find a way to love him up if he was still on the roster. I don't think he's coming back, but they have to find some way to win on the outside, have to find some way to run the football, and they have to use the guys they have. I don't understand why Sony Michel is not a bigger part of this offense, because he's one of their best players right now.
We're talking to Jeffrey Chidiha. You know, then having said all that, and I agree with you, but it feels like we've been down this road before, right? That they're not firing on all cylinders, but then you get to December and then you get to January and they find a way to win. But is this time different?
It feels different just because of we're so deep into the season and they haven't beaten a team that's in that top 4 in the AFC. They've lost to the Ravens. They've lost to the Patriots. I mean, they lost to the Chiefs and they've lost to the Texans. But I agree with you. I feel like a lot of time with this team, Belichick and his staff, it's more tinkering and it's more experimenting than it is worrying about who wins where. And even this time last year, I think a lot of people were off this bandwagon and feeling like they were done. They got on a roll. I don't think it's going to happen this year because I think Baltimore is a much better team and they have to go to their play. But, yeah, they're more vulnerable than they've ever been.
Jeffrey Chidiha breaking it down for us. All right, you mentioned Baltimore, so let me ask you this. You had a great video piece on Marcus Peters a few years back. For those who have never spent time with him, Jeff, how would you describe Peters?
He's a very unique individual. I think he's a misunderstood guy. I think he's intense, and I think he cares about playing football. He loves playing football. When he's with the Chiefs, he got sideways with them because he just couldn't control his temper and his frustrations. And a lot of that had to do, to be honest with you, with their defensive struggles. I think he didn't like what they were doing defensively. Right now, I think he's in the best place he could ever be in the NFL, because with the Ravens, you have a coach who understands him. You have a lot of big personalities. You have a comfort level with his kind of personality. And he's in a contract year. And so he's playing his best ball right now. He's been a big factor in what they've done defensively. People, as much as they talk about Lamar Jackson, that defense has been probably the second or third best defense in the NFL since he showed up, and he's a big part of that.
You guys made so many plays, and I don't even need to ask you if you're surprised by what you see, because I know you're not, knowing what he's capable of. Now, Baltimore did beat Buffalo yesterday in a game where Lamar Jackson and the offense did not completely destroy an opponent, but that does not mean that he had a quiet game by any stretch. It wasn't a blowout where he's sitting down in the fourth quarter, but when you look at Baltimore's offense and their defense, I mean, really, what is their upside? How special is this team?
Well, I saw them play against the Texans when they killed the Texans a few weeks back, and I really thought they were the best team in the NFL then. And a lot of people said, oh, best team in the AFC. They're Niners, Saints, everybody. I said, look, you get around these guys, you get in their locker room, you see them after games, and you see their chemistry, you see their confidence, you see their belief. It's like the Seahawks a few years ago when they got on that roll under Pete Carroll with that defense and Marshawn Lynch. It's just, it's something about being around certain teams where you just know, they know they're the best team. They've got the best chemistry and the best belief. And it's hard to see them losing because they can play their style of football anywhere they go. And that's hard to deal with.
In terms of hard to see them losing, I mean, they haven't lost since September. Yeah. They close out the season with the Jets on Thursday night, and then they follow that up with a game at Cleveland and a home game against Pittsburgh. So it's not outside the realm of possibility that they go into the playoffs on a 12-game win streak. Jeff, just over a year ago, it looked like John Harbaugh would be done in Baltimore. How do you explain that kind of turnaround?
Well, first, hats off to John Harbaugh, who I think is one of the most underrated coaches in the NFL. He's probably one of the top three coaches in football and doesn't get enough credit. But I believe it's two things. I think it's him, and I think it's Lamar Jackson. And not just the way Lamar Jackson plays, but the person he is. And I saw this with Mahomes last year in Kansas City. It's just these guys want to play for him because he's putting his body on the line. He's a humble guy. Not there taking selfies with the fans when the game's closing out. He's not out there saying crazy stuff in the press conferences. He cares about winning. He cares about his team. And that team cares about building him up. Because I think they all remember what it was like when he came into the NFL and people were dogging him and saying he should be a receiver. So I think just that alone, that factor of being counted out, discarded, you know, that stuff all plays well in football.
That stuff does play well. And Jeff, he's about the right stuff. I mean, to your point about he's not at the end of the game taking a selfie with the fans. Man, this guy's all ball. This guy is about football. So when you take a step back before I let you go, and you look at the NFC, you've got Green Bay, Seattle, and New Orleans all at 10-3. You've got the 49ers at 11-2. How big then was that 49er win in New Orleans yesterday?
No, it was massive, and that was the best game of the year, and it felt like the whole day was a playoff-type atmosphere with the Ravens and Bills, this game, the Patriots and Chiefs. But watching that game and watching them be down, it's almost like you forget they were down in that game by a couple scores early.
Right.
Because it looked like folks felt like Saints were going to pull away with it, and, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo's taking some heat for being inconsistent at times. Richard Sherman went down in that game, but they find ways to make plays, and you know, I felt like a couple of weeks ago when I watched them play the Ravens, that was a Super Bowl. I'm sticking with that right now. Those are the two best teams in football, and it's hard to see the Niners losing in the NFC now.
Do you need auto parts, but you can't get to the store right now? Then head to O'ReillyAuto.com. Order parts for convenient pickup in-store. O'Reilly Auto Parts has thousands of quality parts and accessories in stock. You can shop from your phone, your tablet, your computer, and then pick them up on your schedule. With more than 5,000 stores nationwide, there is an O'Reilly Auto Parts store near you with friendly professional parts people who can have your order ready and waiting. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. There are a few more things that happened yesterday, which I do want to get to. For instance, the Rams and the way they showed up last night. Todd Gurley in particular. Gurley force-feeding Seattle's Trey Flowers with one of the nastiest stiff arms you're ever going to see.
And Gurley swings to the outside. Stiff arm into the end zone. He goes for the touchdown.
Trey Flowers is going to get a facial on this one. That was an ugly one, too. Anytime you're playing against Gurley, you have to know the stiff arm is coming. So you either have to knock that hand down or go straight for the knees.
That's NBC, of course. That was a nasty, nasty stiff arm. That looked like the old Todd Gurley. That looked like the old Todd Gurley, and they look like the old L.A. Rams. And by old, I mean last year's crew. That was a rough few hours for Seattle. They watch the Niners beat the Saints, then they go out and they get pushed into the ground by the Rams. And only a few hours after, I hyped the hell out of them on the NFL and CBS. Yeah, thanks for that, fellas. Thanks for absolutely nothing. Thanks for keeping the Rams season alive and making yourselves and me look bad. Again, thank you very little. As long as we're talking about guys getting manhandled, how about a little respect for one Ryan Timothy Tannehill? Hell yes, I just governmented Ryan Tannehill because he didn't just roll into Oakland and pass for nearly 400 yards and three touchdowns. He also put one hell of a lick on Maurice Hurst as the big man was looking to house an interception on the opening drive. This play actually is amazing.
Tannehill under pressure and it's intercepted. Tipped and picked off. Maurice Hurst off to the races. Tannehill cuts him down at about the 25-yard line.
That big dog was off to the races. Man, he saw glory. He saw pay dirt. Nothing but respect to Hurst for the INT and for the big fella showing his wheels down the field. My man was going. He was moving. He had a head of steam. You know he saw that end zone and he was thinking NFL Heisman Trophy on that. And that's when he got absolutely lit up by Tannehill. I have not seen a quarterback lay a hit on somebody like that since Andrew Luck laid out Sharice Wright back in college.
Luck creaming! Sharice Wright, are you kidding?
I hate to put salt in the wound, Raider fan, but that play is the perfect metaphor for your entire season. You get rolling. You're thinking you might be able to do something amazing. Maybe get to the playoffs. Not only get to the playoffs, but possibly win your division. And then you get blindsided and absolutely dump trucked out of nowhere. From looking like an all-time big man pick six to getting flattened by the quarterback in seconds. From 6-4 to 6-7 in a heartbeat. Even with that pick. Even with the pick, that was an amazing play by Tannehill. Like, he gets picked, and instead of giving up on the play, my man turns and starts running like the wind. And you talk about a dude having an angle. And then just lighting up a big man and wrecking his lifelong dream. Not only did he not house it, he got snot bubbled by the QB. A QB who went from looking like one of the biggest busts ever to one of the best signal callers in the NFL. And he is right now. What a moment. And what an amazing meltdown by the Raiders. Because the Raiders didn't just lose that game. They got humiliated at home. 42-21. Outscored 21-0 in the second half. Booed by the hometown fans. That's not how you want to show up in your second to last game in Oakland. Ever. Amy Trask and I were talking about it on Tops. Before the game, I said, Amy. I said, Amy, Amy Trask is awesome. She is so good. She is so smart. I said, Amy, so like, if you look at the Raiders, and they're not only wrapping up their time in Oakland, but in the state of California. And I said, you grew up in Los Angeles. You went to college in the Bay Area. You went on to become CEO of the Raiders. What are your thoughts? What are your memories? What do you think as time is winding down? I don't think either one of us thought that something like that was going to happen. I felt good about Tennessee going into that game, but I did not feel good about the possibility of the Raiders getting beaten down in their second to last game in Oakland, and that's exactly what happened. Raider fan, remember when they were 6-4 and talking about how they were going to KC and they were going to rip that division, not just a playoff spot? Neither do I. Then you had the Ravens and the Bills. Before yesterday, the Ravens technically had not clinched a playoff spot. And now they have, because they went into Buffalo and they beat the Bills, not with Lamar Jackson in their offense, but with Marcus Peters in their defense. Jeffrey Chidiha and I were talking about that last hour. You remember when Peters was traded to Baltimore and then LA signed Jalen Ramsey and all the attention went to Ramsey, and whatever attention Peters did get was not good. You know, questions about his character, his mindset, questions about why another team had given up on him despite his playmaking ability. Yeah, right. So what are people saying about this guy now? What they're saying is he helped turn around their season and that he's a huge reason why they're now the team to beat in the AFC, if not the NFL. In fact, plenty of people thought that he might just go right into the tank after they traded him. Not Peters. He knew better. He told Mike Silver, quote, I've come from worse situations than being traded. I've been shot at. I've been jumped. I've been through all that. I've got cousins who played in the NFL. Josh Johnson has been cut like 13 or 14 times. I ain't nobody's puppet. I handle my business. I bust my ass in practice. I own it when it's bad, and I try to support my family, end quote. Like, that was a good Ravens defense before he got there, and now it's a great Ravens defense. They held the Bills to 209 yards. They sacked Josh Allen 6 times. It was Peters who had the biggest play of the game. Peters who had the biggest party of the day. Baltimore was up 24-17. 1:08 to go. Buffalo had the ball. 4th and 8. Baltimore's 16-yard line. Game on the line. Baltimore's D coordinator, Wink Martindale, goes with a zero blitz, meaning Peters is all alone in coverage on John Brown. In case you missed it, I will roll it for you.
Josh lines up shotgun. Here's the snap. All kinds of pressure now. Josh guns it downfield. It is incomplete for John Brown. He was well covered by Marcus Peters inside the 5. The pass falls incomplete, and the Ravens start to celebrate with 1:03 left to play.
Bills radio. Like, Peters had the textbook pass breakup. Textbook. Then the textbook celebration. Running to the stands, jumping into the stands, and appearing to shotgun a beer. That's a defensive coordinator going with a zero blitz with the game on the line in the red zone. And a cornerback coming up with a huge play. It's crazy. But as Martindale told Peters when he arrived in Baltimore, it takes crazy to coach crazy. Then again, you go with that when you know you've got a ball hawk and a playmaker on the corner. I mean, say what you want about Peters, and some of it's probably true. But when this dude's locked in, he makes a bleep load of plays. Martindale knows it. That's why he puts him in those spots to make those kind of plays. No wonder this guy loves his coach. Peters told Silver, quote, "Wink's got flavor. Wink understands. It's going to take all of us. Andy's a tremendous leader. I've got some real tough love for Wink. He believed in me, and belief can go a long way," end quote, especially as it relates to Peters. Again, I'm not saying this guy's perfect, far from it, but you give this guy a little bit of love, you show him a little bit of respect, it's going to pay dividends, big ones, like that. And just because that win was more about Baltimore's defense does not mean that Lamar Jackson was not doing Lamar Jackson things. He did, like passing for 3 TDs. And like putting Buffalo's Matt Milano on skates.
New set of downs for Baltimore to work with. Shake and bake. Jackson, the acceleration. Uh-oh. And Jackson takes it to the 25-yard line. Lamar Jackson with an excellent run, and he has cracked 1,000 rushing yards on the season.
And how many ankles has he broken?
I mean, that call barely does that justice. If you have not seen that clip, and you are not near a TV right now, I suggest you track that down. Jackson had absolutely nowhere to run and still got 7 yards and still humiliated professional football players, still humiliated world-class athletes. And one more piece from that game. Bills fans, listen, I know you're not about moral victories, but don't despair. I know that final result was not what you wanted. I know you're not about the moral victory, but that was a damn good showing by your team. You stood in. You went toe-to-toe with the best team in the conference. You had a rough day on offense, and you still had a chance to tie it or win it late. And thanks to New England losing, you're still right in this thing. Rest and recover, rebound and rally, because you have been flexed into prime time this week. We are joined by Terry Stotts. Terry, it's good to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing all right, Jim. How are you doing?
Doing great. I'm doing great. And I know you would say the same thing, except maybe you're coming off that tough loss to OKC. You've got the Knicks coming in tomorrow night, or you are hosting them. When you have a game like that against the Thunder, how eager, Terry, are you to get that taste out of your mouth and get back to work as quickly as possible?
To be honest, you know, you as a coach, you want to get back the next day and get better. And, you know, you look at it's tough to lose a game at home. Oklahoma City is playing well, and, you know, every day is, you know, how can we get better the next day and prepare for the next game?
You know, I would imagine it's a long season, and as a team, you've been through some tough stretches in the past, and you've been able to turn it around. Is it something you talk about with the team at all? And you've had some injuries, to be sure. Is it something you talk to the team about at all when you go through a stretch like this? Or because you have guys like Dame and CJ, do you not even need to have that conversation and just know guys will be focused and they'll get it turned around?
Yeah, you know, we're kind of a mixed team, but we've got some veterans. As you mentioned, Dame and CJ have been through it. Melo has been through it. Hassan's been in the league for a while. Ken Bazemore's been in the league for a while. So, you know, we have some veterans who know it's a long season. They've navigated long seasons before, and it's a dip. And sometimes the schedule breaks your way, and you never know when you're going to bust out. And you just got to – the good thing is that our guys know that, hey, we got to come back and bounce back and get the next game and go from there.
Terry Stotts is joining us. Yeah, Terry, you mentioned Melo. It's been just under 3 weeks since he made his debut, and then he averaged 22-8-3 during the win streak. And he was named the Western Conference Player of the Week. What's it been like to work with him so far?
You know, it's been really good. He certainly filled a void for us. He came back in great shape. I was impressed by that. Obviously, he's Player of the Week. He had a really good stretch, and you know, he struggled shooting the ball last night. But like I said, even after his very first game against New Orleans 2 or 3 weeks ago, where he went 4 for 18, but he gets good looks. I mean, he gets shots that you think are makeable shots, and that was the same thing last night. He didn't shoot the ball well, but he got good looks. And, you know, he has his experience, I think, just you can feel it on the court. You can feel his presence on the court, in the locker room, on the practice court. He just, you know, he's been through it all.
We're talking to Terry Stotts. You know, Terry, you mentioned this, but I kind of want to emphasize the point. Like, there's this perception of Melo as a natural scorer, but how impressive is it that he's coming back from being out of the league for a year, he's already playing 35 minutes a night, and he's putting up the numbers he's putting up?
Well, it's a testament to him how diligent and how disciplined he was while he was out of the league. And I know that was a tough period for him, but, you know, at 35, I'm probably playing him too many minutes, but he's physically in great shape. And, you know, what he's been able to do for us, I don't think anybody really saw that coming. I think there were a lot of question marks about him when he came back, and he certainly answered them all.
Terry Stotts is joining us once again. And then, Terry, Rodney Hood suffered that torn Achilles on Friday against the Lakers. You and I have talked in the postseason about him and what he meant to the team since he arrived. So how big of a blow is that from a team standpoint and just from a personal standpoint for you to see him suffer that injury?
Well, it's much more so on a personal level. You know, I think we all, coaches, players, really felt for Rodney as the man, as the player, because he was playing well. He found a home here. Everything was going well. And for him to have an injury like that finishes his season, it's just everybody felt for him. And, you know, obviously from a team, it's a blow because he was we're getting a little bit of a rhythm with the addition of Carmelo, and Rodney was coming into his own, and, you know, he was averaging over 30 minutes a game for us. We got a rhythm, and so from a team standpoint, it's kind of set us back, obviously.
I mean, obviously, and from a team standpoint, you're dealing with more than your share of injuries. I understand this is part of the game. Nobody knows that better than you. But at the same time, is there any part of you that wants to say, come on, now give us a break. Enough's enough.
Well, yeah, you feel that. But, you know, there are a lot of teams around the league that you look at Golden State and you look at some other teams that have been dealing with injuries as well. So it's disappointing on a lot of levels, but you know, nobody, we don't want to use that, and really honestly, nobody wants to hear it either.
Terry Stotts joining us. Now, last week you announced that Pau Gasol is going to join the coaching staff. He has always been far and away one of the most thoughtful players to speak with. What does he bring to the team from a coaching standpoint?
You know, you mentioned, you've spoken with him. He is a very smart guy. He's very thoughtful in his observations and his comments, and he has the respect, in some ways like Melo, that he has the respect of all the players on the team. So when he talks to Hassan or Scalabissiere or some of the rookies, they're going to listen to what he has to say, whatever it is. It could be on court, it could be off court, it could be business related, who knows. But he's got such respect with the players, he just lends himself some credibility that in sometimes that coaches can't do.
We're talking to Terry Stotts. And Terry, you're not going to like this part, but make it about you for a minute. You started your high school basketball career in Guam. You moved to Indiana and you played at Bloomington North. In March, you're going to be inducted into the Indiana Basketball Hall of Fame. When you consider how much basketball means in Indiana and all the tradition in that state, how much does it mean to you to receive that honor?
You know, it is special. You know, Indiana is such a basketball state with Hoosier hysteria, and all the great basketball people who have been inducted into that Hall of Fame, it is quite an honor. And I kind of looked at it as more of a lifetime achievement award because I've been in basketball for all my life, and whether it's my high school, college playing career or my coaching career, it's quite an honor. I was kind of humbled by it.
You know, there's really nobody that I know, Terry, that's had quite the journey you have. Again, you started your high school basketball career in Guam, and then you moved to Indiana, and you played at Bloomington North. So as you look back on that, what was that transition like?
You know, my parents went to Guam when I was 11. They were teachers. And, you know, obviously my dad was a basketball coach, and basketball had been a big part. But he wanted to get me back to the States to play high school basketball. And, you know, I owe a debt for my dad for having that idea, but also I lived with guardians in Indiana who took me in. And, you know, I didn't know when I left Guam, I didn't know what was in store for me in Indiana with the reputation that it had. And everything worked out, at least from a basketball standpoint. And it was an interesting transition. You know, on Guam, I played against the military guys at the Air Force Base and played against grown men there, and then going to Indiana, playing at the Hyper Building at Indiana University. It was a unique journey, to say the least.
Terry Stotts joining us. I have to think, though, Terry, you probably wonder, all right, so how am I going to stack up, right, when I end up showing up in Indiana? But you show up and you average more than 21 points and 12 boards as a junior and a senior. You led Bloomington North to its first sectional championship, and legend has it, on top of all that, you were named prom king. What was that run like for you?
You know, being named prom king as in my first year at that school is probably my biggest accomplishment.
It sounds awesome, actually. I mean, prom king? All right, so listen, one serious note. You and I talked about the work-life balance in the past. It's something that came up with other NBA coaches. As an example, Doc Rivers told the LA Times, there was a time about 3 years ago where he was throwing up constantly. He was losing weight. He needed to get IVs. Scott Brooks told the Times, the grind takes so much out of a coach that it feels like you start the year at 6 feet and then you end it at about a 5'2". What's your way of coping with this or approaching this? How do you deal with that grind?
Well, you know, I read that article, and I liked the different takes different coaches have. And, you know, it's such a personal thing. I think the personalities of coaches are varied across the league, and everybody uses whatever mechanisms. I think for me, and it was mentioned in the article, is, you know, managing your time and whether it's your work time, your exercise time, diet is important because of the hours that we keep. I think everybody deals with stress differently. I don't think there's any one best way, but for me, you know, I pick my spots. You know, I pick my spots to exercise. I pick my spots to have downtime to watch some television with my wife or go out to dinner. Pick my spots to work. You know, if it means getting up early and doing some film, if it means staying up late on the plane, that's what you do. But I think just being aware of it is the most important thing.
Yeah, great point. Being aware of it. So really quickly as a follow, Terry, before I let you go, what about diet? You mentioned diet. As an example, like I do this thing where I go to New York and back in one weekend. I did it this weekend to be on the NFL and CBS, and I bring this not up to like toot my own horn. It's a real issue for me. Like, how do you manage diet when you travel? What's your strategy for that?
You know, I try to minimize my carbs. That, to me, that's the biggest thing. You know, whether it's chips or sweets or anything like that. For me personally, if I can minimize my carbs, then I think my diet, I do the vegetables, raw vegetables when I have a chance. You know, I'm going to slip off and have, I'll be bad for a little bit, but you know, I weigh myself every day just to make sure I'm on the straight and narrow.
That's the truth, isn't it? Like, my wife sometimes will be like, why do you weigh yourself every single day? I'm like, because it works. Because it works. It works for me. That's why I do it.
You know, they say, you know, if you're trying to lose weight, you shouldn't weigh yourself every day. But I think as a maintenance thing, keeping track so you don't wake up one day and you've gained 10 pounds.
That's it. He is in his eighth season with the Blazers. He led them to the Western Conference Finals for the first time in nearly 20 years. And you've got Portland at home against New York tomorrow night. Terry Stotts, my guest. Terry, so good to have you back. I appreciate you. And I always appreciate the conversation. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jim. Always appreciate it.
Let me talk to you about a common problem for just 1 minute. The one thing that health experts, dietitians, athletes, and top performers all seem to agree upon, and that is The perfect diet simply does not exist. Even with a balanced, healthy diet, it can be very difficult to cover all your nutritional bases through food alone. That's why there is Athletic Greens. The Athletic Greens Ultimate Daily All-in-One Health Drink has 75 proven vitamins and minerals and whole food source ingredients, which make it easier for you to get the comprehensive nutrition without the need for a bunch of pills, powders, or complex routines. It is simply the most complete supplement for a better you, and it's different from everything else. It's different because it's delivered in powder form and it's mixed with water. Athletic Greens then requires fewer capsules. It has superior absorption. It does not include any binders or fillers. One scoop of Athletic Greens provides a convenient, affordable, and tasty solution to fill the gaps in your diet. So if you're looking to boost energy, strengthen your immune system, or support gut health, this is the very product for you. Whether you're taking steps towards a healthier lifestyle or you're an athlete pushing for better performance, Athletic Greens takes the guesswork out of everyday good health. Why not try it? Just jump on over to athleticgreens.com/Rome. Claim my special offer right now, 20 free travel packs valued at $79 with your first purchase. athleticgreens.com/Rome. Tom Brady, 19 of 36, 169 yards, one touchdown, one INT. An offense that went 2 for 12 on third down. An offense that had one touchdown in three red zone trips. And a 23-16 loss at home to Kansas City. Nice win for KC. Really nice win for KC. And a hell of a defensive play at the end of that game.
This is the game. Up the middle, pass to the end zone. Knocked down by Breland. Incomplete. Denying Edelman. Denying the Patriots.
Edelman one-on-one. The throw's there. And Breland with the play of the day right there.
This is the game, dog! Breland did make the play of the game. Yes, Edelman put up numbers. He had 8 receptions, 95 yards, and a TD. Except yesterday's offense looked pretty much like the offense has looked for most of the season. An offense that looked awkward.
Awkward.
Slow. And certainly not intimidating or scaring anybody at all. In other words, it looked exactly like what everybody in that video had been describing. No wonder Patriot fans were desperately hoping that Gronk would come back. No wonder they're desperate for that desperate receiver to come back. No wonder they miss Josh Gordon. Now let's get a couple things out of the way. They may not be what they were. They may not look like the way they've looked, but I still cannot count these guys out. Not yet. And anybody who does, I think, is pretty foolish. The number of the Patriots are done columns and segments on radio and TV over the years that have proven to be completely wrong is like infinity. It cannot be counted. It cannot be quantified. I've been burned by it myself. Those takes are about as tired as the on to Cincinnati
jokes. We're on to Cincinnati.
After yesterday's game because, you know, they're playing the Bengals this week. So pretty hilarious stuff there.
We're on to Cincinnati.
And yes, yes, they did get jammed by the refs yesterday. Hard. There was the Travis Kelce fumble that was blown dead.
This time they're throwing this football. Finds Kelce. Where do they mark this? Ball comes out. That whistle at the end. You can hear the whistle. All kinds of things to figure out. Where's the forward progress?
There was that. And then there was the N'Keal Harry touchdown that shouldn't have been, or should have been, I should say, and never was.
This play lines up in a slot to the left. 24-yard penalty. That's Harry. And he dives. Was he out or in?
Ah, that's close. This is really close.
Brady looked up at the giant screen and has already run down to start celebrating because he knows that's a touchdown. But the problem is they have no challenges.
That is a problem. Great to see that the refs are in postseason form already. Nothing like having an enormous game between two of the best teams in the conference, two of the best quarterbacks in all of football. And one of the biggest talking points coming out of that game, of course, the refs. mean, it blows my mind that in just about every single game, there's some incredibly weird or just, well, incredibly wrong call that's made. And it's happening time and time and time again. Like, how's that even possible at this point? Seriously, how is it this bad, and how has it not been fixed yet when they've got the technology? Then again, those are the same two questions that are being asked about the Patriots' offense. How is it this bad, and how has it not been fixed yet? Because as bad as that Harry non-TD was, we aren't talking about it today if the Patriots punch it into the end zone from the 3-yard line after that play. They had first and goal from the 3, and they lost 2 yards on a run, threw an incomplete pass, and then were sacked for a 6-yard loss. From first and goal at the 3 to kicking a field goal at the 11. The refs butchered the call. The Patriots butchered the rest of that drive. No wonder they were so pissed. They knew they weren't going to punch it in. No wonder that story about will the Patriots try to make a move for a particular receiver who keeps getting desperate on Twitter and Instagram continues to pop up. And how great is it that the, quote, sources close to the team seem to imply that not bringing him back is some sort of moral stand that Bob Kraft and the others are taking? Yeah, right. Yeah, okay. Whatever. Yeah, remind me again, assuming that this is some kind of great moral play or moral stand, can somebody remind me once again what Bob Kraft was doing allegedly the morning before the last time his team faced Kansas City? Oh, that's right. He was allegedly visiting sex workers in a strip mall. Yeah, just don't forget, this was the same organization that brought him in after he threatened to assault a member of the front office of another team. That receiver I'm talking about. But it's a moral play. Shortly after they signed him, they learned about the sexual assault allegations and tried to tell everybody that if they had known about those allegations, they never would have signed him in the first place. But once they did know about it, they still played him against Miami and made sure to get him really involved in the offense. If you're wanting to spin any decision not to bring him back as moral, man, skip me with that. Don't bring that around here. We learned everything we needed to know about the moral compass of this organization earlier this season, so keep moving with that stuff. I'm sure they've got their reasons for not bringing that guy back. They're just not moral or ethical reasons. How about this? Maybe the owner is still pissed that the player took a run at him, personally. You think it might have something to do with that? So, to recap, the Patriots continue to be beatable. The referees continue to be awful. New England is still 10-3. They still have a very good defense. They still have a very good coach, and they have a very stoppable offense. That's about as easy to defend New England as it's been in a long, long time. And no amount of pump-up videos is going to change that. They need to figure something out, or they need to change up the talent, or both. But spare me with the following. The Patriots are done. The Patriots have some sort of moral code about a certain receiver, and the hilarious zingers about who they have next. Save me all of those things. Dennis Dodd. Dennis, good to have you. How are you?
Jim, how are you? It's a pleasure to be back.
Great to have you back. All right, so much to talk about in college football right now, but let me start with something even more exciting than the bowl season and the college football playoffs. I'm talking about Lane Kiffin being introduced, Dennis, as the head coach at Ole Miss. From where I'm sitting, the SEC not only got more interesting, the entire world did. You've written that it's a perfect fit. Lay that out for me. Why is he and they a perfect fit?
Well, because Ole Miss has, let's just say, a morally casual attitude in the past to recruiting. And I think there's two words, like, it's a fit. Hugh Freeze. They were willing to, you know, they won 10. Whatever happened, happened after that. And they're willing to live with the aftermath, the consequences of that. And I think everybody knows what I'm talking about. I'm not casting any disparaging on Lane, but it's great for him. Like, he had his choice between Ole Miss and Arkansas and maybe some others. Ole Miss is a place where he keeps saying it right now in his press conference. You know, they've done it here before. That's why they're willing to put up with him, and whatever that means. He seems like a more mature guy, Jim, in the early press conference, but he was played off the stage when he was introduced with Bachman-Turner Overdrive taking care of business.
He's the best. You know, Dennis Dodd joining us. I was going to say to you, Dennis, like, when he was head coach at Tennessee, he was a breath of fresh air to some, but really annoying to others because he was so cocky. He talked such a huge game. You mentioned that he comes off a little more mature right now. Let me ask you this. If you're Ole Miss, do you want a refined and restrained Lane Kiffin, or do you want the trash-talking guy from Tennessee?
Oh, you want the entire package. No, you want. You already see that. I don't know if you saw that viral video out there. He's like kissing babies on the tarmac after getting out of the plane at Ole Miss, and some guy comes right up to him and goes, "You need to get you a burner phone." I think Lane Kiffin knows that he needs to get a burner phone. And just now somebody asked him in the press conference about that greeting, and he goes, "Well, he goes, it's better than the last tarmac experience I had." So
right.
You want the trash talking Lane and the swashbuckling Lane and going after five stars, and you can only imagine tweaking Nick Saban as he's done since he's been at Florida Atlantic. You know, look forward to more of that.
We're talking to Dennis Dodd, and he's going to get that opportunity, right? He didn't just come back to the SEC. He came back to the SEC West, where he gets to go up against the likes of LSU, Alabama, Auburn, and Texas A&M. Now, Dennis, you were in Arlington for the Big 12 title game between Oklahoma and Baylor. What did you make of how that game played out?
What I wrote about is it really showed me how good these two defenses are. In a larger picture, you can see now why Lincoln Riley and Matt Rhule are coveted so much by the NFL. There's a lot of talk about it. Oklahoma's gone. We all know Lincoln Riley's offensive chops. They've gone from 10th to 1st in the Big 12 in total defense. That's a little bit like being the world's tallest midget. But they are. They're more physical. You know, the matchup with LSU is tough, but they're better. Baylor was on a chance with the Loser Leaves Town match to go to the playoff in overtime with Oklahoma with a third-string quarterback. That says something about coaching. The Jacob Zeno legend was almost born on Saturday night. This is a guy who was, as a true freshman, with Jalen Hurts on the scout team until Friday, until they played safety in practice. And then on Saturday, trying to win a Big 12 championship. So it showed the chops of these two coaches, how really good they are. I'm told today there's nothing on Dallas radio but which of these guys the Cowboys want. Now, that's a bunch of fans' wishful thinking, but it's not going to go away anytime soon for these two coaches.
Both are highly, highly coveted. Dennis Dodd is joining us, and you're right about Zeno. If things break a little bit different, he is an absolute legend today. So Oklahoma's won 5 straight conference titles. This is their 3rd straight playoff appearance. They got to go up against LSU, and they're going to face Joe Burrow. Let me get your thoughts on that. How did he go from being a good quarterback to being the best quarterback in school history and a Heisman favorite in such a short period of time?
Yeah, series of things. I mean, there was latent talent there. He and the family were really disappointed that Nebraska didn't show more interest when he left Ohio State. A decision was made, you know, 2 springs ago that Dwayne Haskins won the job. He went on to post, 54 total touchdowns. But there are those that will tell you that Joe Burrow thought he'd won the job. And when he didn't, he moved on. And then obviously the next big thing was that after his first season where he was a 57% passer, Ed Orgeron, to his credit, went whole hog into the RPOs and spread offense and hired Joe Brady from the Saints. And it was a perfect fit. I mean, I don't know if there's an offense in the country that runs RPOs better right now than LSU. And you've got to see him live. Jim, I haven't seen him live until the Alabama game. The arm strength is there. The accuracy we know is there. The savvy is there. And he does not, the better or worse, he does not slide. He takes guys on, and he takes them on to get first downs and yardage. And his story's really good, too. He's the best player in the game right now.
Dennis Dodd joining us. All right, what about the other side? How different, Dennis, is Clemson right now at the end of the season versus the start of the season when maybe Trevor Lawrence might have been trying to do too much and was turning the ball over?
Much better. I think after 3 weeks, he led the ACC in interceptions. The second half of the season, 6 games, he's got 20 touchdown passes, no interceptions. And we can talk about the quality of competition all we want, but that's not their fault. I mean, they're in the conference they're in. you know, for better or worse, they are, I say it every year, they're an ACC team masquerading as an SEC team in terms of resources, recruiting, winning, everything else. So they're an elite team. You know, I saw Dabo compare this to the 1956 Alabama team that started first, went undefeated, and finished third. Different set of circumstances, I think we all know. There was civil unrest in the country that year. This has nothing, has everything to do with football and schedule strength. But they're really good. Number one and number two defenses, by the way, in that semifinal. Probably the most entertaining one. You know, the other one, Oklahoma and LSU is an undercard. This is going to be really, really good.
Let's go to Buffalo. Dan in Buffalo. What's going on, Dan? How are you?
Hey, is this Jim?
It is. Is this Dan?
How's it going, Mr. Rome? Yeah, it's Dan from the 716. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, pretty good. Yeah, so I heard earlier that you haven't heard out from anyone in the Mafia. I mean, we're still here. We played the Super Bowl.
Now you're not.
I don't like that call. Not a
no offense, bro. I just felt like I had to do that. Is this Jim? No, it's the other guy who hosts this show. Is this Jim? Bro, are you listening to the program? You're on hold. You're getting the audio right through the receiver directly into your ear. So if I say to you, let's go to Buffalo to talk to Dan. Hey, Dan, how are you? Who else could it be but Rome? Who else would say that? Hawk? Alvy? Old man Ike? The big head, James Kelly.
Hey,
of course it's Rome. Yes, it's Jim. Or Van Smack, or Rome, or Snaglio Ordonez, or whatever you want to call me. Yes, but who else could it be? It's not that confusing. I know that there's a certain amount of panic that kicks in when you hear that, which means you're on the air. But who else could it be? Is this Jim? No, it's Boomer Esiason. Of course it's Jim.
Fair is fair. Let's get the response. We go to the 360. Wells in the 360. Wells, what's up?
Hey, Jim, not much. Yeah, wanted to call back and respond to Rick for making fun of me for doing a gender reveal for my future son. Rick, you should consider doing a gender reveal for yourself. And way to go with the gender reveal smack, Boomer. I mean, the only thing lazier than that is your left eye. I don't know if you saw these pictures on Twitter. This guy was at the Bills game yesterday. I can't tell if he's looking at the camera or checking out some babe in section 106, row 23. This guy can look at Josh Allen and the receivers 40 yards downfield at the same time. But it finally makes sense about how a teacher can call so much during school hours. This guy's good eyes on his students while his lazy eyes reading his crappy script. And then if he does need to call in a student, he just covers an eye up so they know who he's looking at. I mean, this dude's eye is so lazy it rides around on one of those motorized skateboards. This thing travels more than James Harden. But it all started because I did a gender reveal. I know when Rick's parents tried his gender reveal, they were all excited. They had the blue balloons and pink balloons. That's what they were expecting. The family's there. The cardboard box opens with purple balloons. Everyone's confused. The family just says, congrats, you guys are having a beta male. All Rick's dad could do was go full Gordon Hayward and lie through his teeth. Daddy's always happy. Rick, your dad wasn't happy. He was disappointed then, and you've disappointed him every day since. I'm out.
Look at Wells getting in under the buzzer, no less.
Good night now.